Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Comic-Con Stars. We're back for another hour of entertainment and some of the most fun you can have on a Thursday night on the internet. This is Dr. John, along with my fantastic panel, Papa Stro Maestro and Dave Atwell. And we've got some great guests tonight, some of my favorite guests. I guess I'm going to start with our usual announcements and let everybody know what's going on. First of all, this Saturday night, Papa Stro, tell us about this Saturday night. What's happening?
This Saturday night, UPWA Pro Wrestling at the Armed Forces Recruiting Center up at Carolina Beach Road in Wilmington, North Carolina. Show starts at 7, I think, bell time 7:30. A lot of great wrestling action, or wrestling action, if you will, what part of the country you're from. And for more info, go to theupwa.com. And I just found something really cool today, actually, guys.
What?
The Russians didn't do it.
Imagine that.
Yeah, I've been watching that all day myself.
All right, catch me up. I've been working on Steampunk Mid-Atlantic. Which Russians didn't do what?
I want to say like Cedric the Entertainer from that movie Be Cool, when he looked at him and said, Russians.
All right, listen, will somebody please fill me in? I'm the last person in the world to know, okay?
Well, we've got Comey calling in a minute. He's not doing anything now, so he's going to join us tonight.
Pretty soon
well,
he'll be writing books, too.
That boy better
he can go call me some dinner. I'm hungry.
Okay, so the Russians didn't do it. All right, let me finish the calendar because we got to get into some Comic Con stars here. Let's see, the next weekend, June 16th through the 18th, the one and only Heroes Con in Charlotte. Papa Stro will be there. I will be there. It'll be a blast. And then
wait, capes on.
The next week, with capes on, okay. And then Saturday and Sunday, June 24th and 25th, the one and only Steampunk Mid-Atlantic in Raleigh, North Carolina, featuring the Up All Night Film Festival hosted by Papa Stro Maestro. So that'll be a lot of fun. Saturday, July the 1st, the Sumter Comic-Con. Saturday, August the 12th, the Cape Fear Comic-Con in Wilmington, followed by the Up All Night Film Festival, again hosted by Papa Stro Maestro, as long as he doesn't mind. And then, of course, November 4th, the Jacksonville, North Carolina Comic-Con, the only Comic-Con mean enough to make it in Jacksonville. So we're going to have a blast. We've got a lot of other dates and events.
Well, let me add there, Dr. John, that somebody else, this really handsome guy, is also going to be at Heroes Con this weekend with y'all.
Do you know who that would be?
Ha, funny. It's
Brad
me.
Pitt?
It's me.
All right.
Much more for me. I'll be at Heroes.
Awesome.
Pretty good drawer. He will be there. Yes, he will, and he will be with us at Cape Fear. So we're gonna have
Grub will have a cape on too.
It's gonna have a big T on the back for Trump. It's gonna be my Trump cape. It's gonna be a beautiful cape. The best.
Making Comic Cons great again.
That's exactly
making Comic Cons great again. That's our new slogan, guys. Making Comic Cons great again. I like that. All right,
and no beheadings allowed.
I'm going to build a wall and make the cosplayers pay for it.
I want to try it like Aquaman.
Excuse me.
There's somebody that had one at a con I was at, and we were like poking each other with it.
Yeah.
Those things are great.
I think the show already started. Dave, how are you doing tonight?
Well, I am doing fantastic, and as of about 45 minutes ago, I am doing fantastic-er. So if I can take about 30 seconds for some shameless self-promotion, The Hungry
Theory
open for business on Amazon. So Rotting Frontier, the first book of the series, is back on sale on Amazon as we speak. And we haven't got the ebook up yet, but the paperback is alive and well. It will be followed by Revelations and Ripper in the upcoming days and weeks. It's kind of funny how it takes you 4 months to write a 100,000-word book, and then it takes you another 8 months to format it because it's such a pain in the neck to do. So the fourth one is wrapped up. We are doing the cover business on it right now, and I'm about 40,000 words into book five. And
nice.
I tell you, it feels good to be back in business. You know what I mean? After a year being out and dealing with all I've had to deal with the bad publishing deal, I feel like I blew up the Death Star, or at least ways like slowed it down a little bit for another better guy. So,
rock and roll.
That's awesome.
Congratulations, my brother.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, by the way, National Best Friends Day, everyone.
Well, oh, yeah,
National
for sure.
Best Friends Day.
Brett,
absolutely.
That means you're going to be awful lonely today.
Wow. Hey,
just go on Amazon and get you one.
A mail order best friend.
They usually made out of latex.
Call me in on over.
Hey, John, how are you?
Oh. I'm fine.
Really?
How are you doing?
Just
hey,
saw you
hey.
Pop online.
Hey, Justin, how you doing, brother?
What's up?
Hey, Stro. Hey, Dave, how are you? Doing good.
Hey, how's it going, brother?
All right, man.
I'm doing pretty good.
And
too sweet.
Good, and I saw
too sweet.
John, is that John Strickland that came on the line?
Easy peasy lemon squeezy. It is me.
God, what does that mean?
All right.
Help us all. Okay. Well, the world's craziest group of people has now
that's me,
gone
Big
live.
John, Big Tree.
Oh my goodness! All right, I'm going to let Papa Stro start us off. Papa Stro, give us a topic because you know you got the seven biggest wrestling fans in the world here. So start us off, and we're going to get cranking.
Okay, you got it. It's just like in general topics or?
Yeah, anything you want. It is like free form for all of us, and we'll just go from there.
Okay, here we go.
Dangerous.
All right. What's the most funniest, outrageous, crazy story that any of you guys want to share with us that you've experienced personally? And whoever wants to go first, feel free.
I'm going to call on Brett Watson. Brett Watson, tell us what's going on in your life up there in Spartanburg at APW.
Well, actually,
it's outrageous and crazy.
This past weekend.
It's outrageous and crazy.
Okay, cool.
Everything's outrageous and
crazy. Yeah, everything up there is outrageous and crazy.
Well, do tell.
Well, as of last weekend, my girlfriend got kidnapped by a Syrian chief.
What?
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
In stereo.
Yeah.
Interpol has been alerted. Well, I heard a rumor that she was led out with a rope around her. And even some lady in the audience tried to give her a knife to cut herself free. Is that right, Brett?
Yes. Handed her a pocket knife to cut herself free and try to fight.
Okay. I thought you said mouth to mouth. First thought you said mouth to mouth. I was going to say, okay. All right. Hello.
And then another lady, the guy that was leading her by the rope, he walks up to the guardrail. She jumps up out of the audience and comes from left field and smacks him so far across the face that the fat on the other side of his cheek was going wah 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 wah.
Oh, was it like that movie with Ben Stiller where his face slid down that guy's chest playing basketball? The hairy chest.
Yes. That's what it looked like. It was crazy. crazy.
That's awesome.
Thank you, Brett. We had to get that one in.
That's too cool.
All right, John Strickland, we're glad you're here. You tell us the craziest thing in wrestling that's happened to you in a while.
In a while? I mean, man, that's a long laundry list. I'll pick out a good one, actually. I heard recently that I experienced. It's really more of a good mockery than a good laugh. But so I had a guy come up to me who wrestled, and I had shared with him a video about Danny Hodge, who we all know. And, you know, Danny's famous for, you know, busting apples for kids with his grip. It used to be pliers and stuff like that. So this guy tells me up and down, he swears he can bust apples, and, you know, and he looked at the video and he goes, "Oh, that man's not that big. I can do it." So I knew he couldn't, but, you know, for kicks and giggles, I made sure I recorded it and put it on the internet. He couldn't bust the apple. Then he tried with two hands and he couldn't bust an apple. And then he started stomping on it, and finally after about 20 minutes, he busted an apple stomping on it. But probably the craziest thing I've seen, and really, if you'd have been there just to see the look on his face, I think he thought it was going to be, he actually said to me, "You can't bust an apple with your grip." "No, you can. I want to see this. I'll bring an apple next time." So I brought an apple.
Awesome.
Lord have mercy. Oh,
I've seen a guy do it with his teeth one time.
Oh, that took me a minute to set in. That was good.
I tell you whose apple I wouldn't mess with, and that's the Adam's apple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that the ADDAMS, the Adam's apple?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Thank you,
sir. I'm sorry, that was the worst joke in history. All right, Greg Bowe, how about you?
Well, this one was a while back. Somebody we all know and love is Boogeyman, Jimmy Valiant.
All right.
I love Jimmy. Jimmy's so great. This had to be about 10 years ago, though. And Boogie was going through the whole lifestyle change, going vegetarian and whatnot. And we were over at APW, and we're in the dressing room. And this is back when APW was at its old place in Spartanburg, and right across the street was Kentucky Fried Chicken, the whole thing close by. And Boogie's sitting there, and Boogie's getting hungry, and he looks at me and goes, "Greg Bo, brother, I'm starting to get hungry. What can we get something to eat around here?" I said, "Well, there's Kentucky Fried Chicken across the street." And I forgot he was doing the whole vegetarian thing.
Yeah.
But he said, "Oh, I can find something, brother." So here we are at 9:30 on a Saturday night, traffic going all up and down in Spartanburg. And here's me and Boogie Woogie Man Jimmy Vance walking, dodging cars to get across the street to get the Kentucky Fried Chicken. And you have not lived until you have been at Kentucky Fried Chicken with Jimmy Valiant at 9:30 at night in a Spartanburg while he's trying to disseminate the menu and figure out what he's getting. Everybody in there is looking like, "What in the world?" Just a funny memory for me.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, my God.
Love Jimmy.
I can imagine. Yeah,
he's great.
He's great. Dave Atwell, what's your recollection?
Well,
come on, Crazy Dave. I know
so
you got
funny.
Some.
Well, I mean, there's a bunch of them, man. There's some I really that don't bear repeating that were pretty evil that I saw some people do, but I got an Ox Baker story that's just horrible that I have to tell when we're off air. But you know, when Ric Flair, when the Horsemen were doing when it was Benoit, McMichael and Anderson, and the NWO was just first coming in and all that jazz. There was a bunch of us that I worked with. We rented out a van, and one of those big 15-passenger Titan van and everything, and we loaded all of us up. We drove out to Lawrence Joel out there in Winston-Salem. That was the night, if you guys remember, it was War Games when they did the whole – you can have my spot, not my liver spot, not my dog spot, that whole thing they did. And Kurt Hennig was supposed to be taken over for, I think it was Arn, if I'm not mistaken. And it was supposed to be Hennig, Flair, McMichael, and Benoit against the NWO. So anyhow, they get out there, they start fighting, because Arn couldn't fight. Will Perfect didn't come out. So make a long story short, the way it was supposed to work was Perfect was supposed to come out, slam Rick's head. He was supposed to finally show up at the end of the match after NWO has worked the horseman over, because it was a 4-on-3. Hennig was supposed to come out and slam Rick's head in the door. Well, apparently the spring load on that thing didn't work, and Rick actually got his head cracked open. So you see Dillinger and all those guys, the security guys, and Benoit, they've got all the NWO guys handcuffed to the War Games used to have the two rings with the double cage and everything? Well,
right.
All the horsemen were handcuffed to this chain, or to this chain link fence. And you see Benoit just stop, and he's looking down at Flair. Flair isn't moving, and all of a sudden he quits doing the act and starts yelling, "Hey, hey, get somebody over here." Dillinger and all them run out. Well, that's when that pay-per-view on television cut off. Well, after it stopped rolling, we're right there in the arena. Now, what you don't do is do something to Ric Flair. You don't do Ric Flair dirty in Winston-Salem. You don't do it. Well, that whole arena went nuts. They grabbed Hennig, and the group split up. The security guys split up. One of them tended to Flair. The rest of them got Hennig and got him. How they got him out of there is beyond me. The refs and everything, all the bulls stopped. I mean, Nash, Hall, all of them stopped the act, and they're all gathering around Flair. So they're making announcements, please, everybody, have a good night, blah, 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 trying to get us out of the arena. Well, we go outside, and like I said, there was like 14 or 15 of us that traveled together. We go outside Lawrence Joel, and there's people outside of the arena that won't leave. Crowds of people that are coming together wanting to get hold of Kurt Hennig. The highway patrol had to come out and put a halo, set up a halo around the arena. And when we all got back to the van, we were missing two guys. So me and one of the other guys said, well, we need to go back out and find them. We started walking back towards the arena and had two patrolmen stop us and say, we can't let you go any further. We're still missing two guys, though. He says, the best thing I can tell you to do is go sit in the van and wait. I mean, there were guys getting stuff out of their trucks. There were guys walking around the parking lot with tire irons. Here we are, short two guys. And, man, you want to talk about just draw it up, And as soon as the other two guys popped up, we cranked that van up and got the hell out of there, because it was something to behold. And how they got Hennig out of that building that night, they had to address them in drag. There is no way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was big-time heat that night.
Great story, but I thought it was supposed to be recent.
Here, that
I'm
was almost recent.
Breaking apples. That's a great story. I could have came up with a better story than that, but better story than I had, because you had a great story. Did I hear you wrong, though? Was Ox Baker supposed to be in there, or did I miss it?
Yeah, Ox Baker done something pretty horrible, and I guess I'll go ahead and say it. It's, and I don't mean to offend when I speak about it. It was a horrible thing that he did. We're in Savannah.
Ox Baker? No.
And yeah, of course not. And for those of you who don't know who Ox Baker is, just while you're listening, do a quick Google on this guy. Nevertheless, we walk into the arena that evening, and he's sitting up in the upper deck with some good-looking blonde, and he's smoking him a pipe. Got his arm around her, smoking a pipe. You got to remember, this is, you know, 1980, 1981, back when, you know, smoking wasn't punishable by death. So, did I just say that? So,
it is
in L.A., Baker and help me out, Stroh, Ferguson, God, what was his name? They were Mid-Atlantic Tag Champs.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, Ferguson was the name, I can't remember, but anyhow, during the evening, there was a, God, that sounds like your ride's showing up, Greg Bo.
Stroh, they're coming to get you now.
Got a siren back there. No bueno. But, anyhow, during the fight, America's least wanted, right? there's a young man that was standing around the ring that night.
Okay.
And he had Down syndrome. And
oh, man.
Before every match, he would jump up and, you know, he'd walk around the ring, and the wrestlers would stick their hands out there and give him a high five as he ran around the ring. And when the fight started, they kind of pulled him back, you know, behind the fence there, because back those days we had fences around the ring, not the padded barriers, you know. So right before the match, it was Baker and that Fergie guy fighting against Ted DiBiase and Tommy Rich. And this was back when Ted DiBiase was Ted DiBiase, not the Million Dollar Man, of course. This is the Georgia stuff. So,
good old days.
This kid goes ballistic over Tommy Rich. I mean, is absolutely having a fit. He slides up in the ring, gets away from his help, and he slides into the ring, and he's high-fiving him. And to everybody's credit, everybody stays cool. He has his moment up there. Tommy Rich holds his hands up. Everybody's cheering for him. They get him out of the ring, and he walks around the side of the ring to down there on the ground behind Oxbaker's corner, and he starts yelling. And, you know, you can't understand what he's saying, but he's hollering something, and Oxbaker, just as nonchalant as you could possibly do, just turned his head and spit the biggest wad right on this kid. I mean, if you ever get my old man around, because my dad was with me, and he could still tell you that story like it happened yesterday, but if that wasn't how he drew up that much snot in one wad, I mean, it had to have been a golf ball. And hit that kid right between the running lights with it, and it was awful. So, you know, here I am. I'm about, you know, 10, 11 years old, and my brother's sitting next to me. We're looking at one another. We're like, did he just do that? We get suspended from school for doing that stuff.
Well, the kid was a rich man.
Unreal, man.
Oh, my goodness. All right, Pop Stroh, you get to answer next. What's your story?
Okay. Well, this was pretty recent, actually. It happened just maybe like a month or so ago at the CAC in Las Vegas. The big banquet, the awards back of the year every year where they honor, you know, some of the legends of the past and all that, and some of the recent ones. And right before the banquet started, you know, I was going to the whole meet and greet thing with everybody, and I had Dorothy with me, of course. And anybody knew Dorothy is, that's Papa's little girl. And I went above the Howard Finkel, right? And the WWE table, which they had Howard Finkel there, Jimmy Hart, Ricky Steamboat, Sergeant Slaughter, Pat Patterson, Gerald Briscoe, you know, quite a few guys there. And I'm talking to Howard Finkel, right? Because I've always wanted to hear him say Kabuki. Right? please say Kabuki for me. It's one time. Please. I sound like James Brown. Please, baby, please say Kabuki, right? So finally he says, he does this, you know, Howard Finkel announcer voice, so, you know, says, live from Madison Square Garden, here is the great Kabuki, right? I popped, right? I fell out. I had Dorothy in my hand. I bumped into Jerry Briscoe, right? He turns around to say hello. He sees Dorothy. He freaks out. He bumps into Pat Patterson, who bumps into Jimmy Hart, who bumps into Sergeant Slaughter. It's like a whole domino effect right in the table, right? You know, all bumping into each other. And B. Brian Blair, he was up on stage getting ready for the ceremony. He saw the domino collision from Dorothy, and he was just like shaking his head, laughing. So hard he about fell down, took a bump himself. And my luchador friends from Mexico, they're like ja-ja, you know, they're like laughing their butts off, and oh yeah. So we had to take a few minutes to kind of recollect ourselves before the banquet started from Dorothy freaking everybody out. But yeah, she had her own plate.
Brian Blair was there?
Oh, yeah, he was the master of ceremony.
Oh, so it's a good thing the Sheik wasn't there then, right?
Oh, dear Lord. I can't even imagine.
Brian Blair, you said no good.
David,
you're
talking about the real
Sheik? Thank you, Elmo.
The real Sheik?
Yeah.
You're talking about the real Sheik, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Let's just say Iron Sheik wouldn't be Brian Blair's tag partner.
No, absolutely
killer,
not.
Killer bee, you know what I mean? He would stretch the bee.
Wow.
Still, that story told about Hulk Hogan, he goes, Hulk Hogan, you say no good. You see me, you see Sheik, you say, Sheik, baby, I love you. I call you. You know, so call it Sheik.
Oh, Sheik. <geez. laughs> You seen the thing on YouTube where a fan's wanting to get Sheik to sign something, and the lady said about something about Hulk Hogan, and she looked at Hulk Hogan, ha, poor Hulk Hogan, gay. And then after he starts yelling, he looks at her and says, "Thank you very much, ma'am. Sheiky, love you."
John, did I tell you the Dusty story when I was a kid? Oh, that was
funny. Tell us.
Oh, Dusty, yeah.
Tell us.
Did I tell you that story last time about Dusty when I was in Greenville back in early 80s?
Oh, that was
I don't know,
tale,
tell
please.
Us again. We want to hear it.
Okay, so we're at Memorial Auditorium in Greenville, South Carolina. The year, let's just say it's 1982, 81, something like that. And I'm there at the arena with a few of my friends, and we're running around like a bunch of uncaged animals. And it's before the event. I don't even think the actual doors are open yet, but they'd let us in. We're running around. There's no security, really. It's pretty lax. Of course, a lot of the wrestlers are already there. And I'm maybe 10 years old, probably 45 pounds, 4 foot tall or something. I come beelining around a corner downstairs, and I was going to go to the concession stand. And what I do, actually, I get to the concession stand, I get a Coke and a slice of pizza. So as I turn around pretty quick, and as I turn around, I run straight into Dusty Rhodes. I mean, when I say run right into him, I mean literally physically run into him. And it knocked me on my butt. He just knocks me flat. And my drink's on me, my pizza's on the floor. And I'm not upset about it because I look up and there's Dusty Rhodes. And I'm like, well, if somebody's going to knock your pizza out of your hand, let it be Dusty Rhodes, right? So I stand up and I got all this just syrup on me from this soda. I'm just sticky, wet. And I'm like, Mr. Rhodes, can I have your autograph? Watch where you're going, kid. Beat it.
Yeah.
It stuck in my crawl all these years. Like, I really just hated Dusty Rhodes after that. I was a fan until that. And led me to meet Jack Briscoe. It led me to meet Jack Briscoe.
Oh, yeah.
Jack Briscoe
saw
the incident. Called me over a little while later and said, hey, go up here to the counter, tell them to give you a T-shirt, tell them Jack sent you, and then go back up and get another slice of pizza. And then that's kind of how I actually got into wrestling. But, Dusty Rhodes. And, of course, growing up with all your friends in those days, you know, Rose was a huge face, I mean, during that time, and or really from that time on, right? I guess from the 60s on or early 70s on. And, you know, I'm at school and, man, I love the American Dream. And I'm just sitting there going, shut up before I hit you. You know, I'm just sitting there all the time. Hey, Strickland, don't you love Dusty? Shut up. Who player destroys in the Starcade? You know, but yeah.
Oh, I got a funny Dusty Terry Funk story I got to tell you guys. Oh, my God. One of the shows I was at with him a while back, it was a cage match, right? Dusty Rhodes versus Terry Funk, right? And I think missed one of their matches down in Florida, right? They're in their feud down for, you know, Championship Wrestling Florida. And Terry hits on the mic and says, he's looking right at Dusty across the ring in the cage. He says, you know, I respect everybody in this professional wrestling business. I even respect that banana nose Ric Flair. But I've always hated you, Dusty Rhodes, you big, fat, beast whale. and Dusty's trying to hold it in. He's, like, trying to keep him laughing, right? So Dusty, I'm like, hey, fuck, let me tell you something right now, Daddy. I would go up there right now, smack you in the mouth, and give you a Dusty Rhodes bonnet gilbo beside your noggin. But right now, you're making my sides hurt, quivering from laughing at your... Sorry, big F right now. I can't even speak. He's like holding his ribs, right? To keep from laughing. Terry, I think he signaled for Terry to get up on him because he couldn't even move, right? So Terry just, what you say, you son of a bee? And started sitting there, right? And throughout, you can see Dusty like keeling over laughing because, you know, Terry was making him laugh so hard. Oh, my gosh. But we were watching Dusty just like fall into the mat, just laughing his butt off.
Still, Dusty going to the Midnight Rider gig—that was probably one of the best things. I mean,
oh, Midnight Rider, Dusty, yeah,
yeah. When he gets suspended, and then you hear this guy, the Allman Brothers start playing. Here comes this, you know, this big fat curly haired white guy with a pair of black trunks with DR on the back.
Oh, is that the real doctor?
Yeah. He's good. And he wrestles like 3 or 4 matches, you know, once a week. He goes in there. The match only lasts like 45 seconds. And then finally Gordon Sully gets him in there because we're going to get a moment to finally speak to the Midnight Rider and find out who this man of history is. He gets up there.
I remember that,
like,
that feud he had with Kevin Sullivan in Florida, Midnight Rider versus Lucifer. You see that?
Yeah,
where,
man.
Kevin Sullivan had the hood and Midnight versus the Midnight Rider. And, oh, that was crazy.
Just
but
a question.
You
got to
get Dusty props. I mean, for guys that have a great
my dad
physique,
when
he could go.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. He was right up there,
I mean,
Harley
and Flair get in there
and
fight
the
for
Funk,
days.
Briscoe,
yeah.
They go,
I mean,
all
Dusty,
night.
Dusty
they
looked like he's out of shape, and he would wrestle these hour-long matches. And it's just, I'm amazed. I give him his props. I mean,
he won the world title with a crossbody on Harley Race. They ended up getting off the top rope. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, you're not getting up from that.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's amazing Harley wasn't close enough to the ropes to stick his leg on the third, you know, on the lower rope. I mean, that was his best way not to lose his title.
Harley
hey,
was the man back then. He was tough as nails. He can do anything he wants. Anything he wanted to do.
Can anyone in the thing hear my dad when he talks? Because I stopped
Greg
being Bo. Able to hear him a second ago.
Who's your dad?
Uh-oh.
Greg.
Greg Bowe.
Vaguely, man.
Vaguely?
It was those sirens coming for him,
let's
wasn't
see.
It?
Greg Bowe.
Yeah, I think they took him off.
Tell John I'm calling
is Greg
back.
Greg Bowe there now?
Oh, well, now I heard him. We
oh,
hear him.
Now. Well, there I am. Hey.
Can you hear me?
Right.
So you outran the law then.
You've reappeared.
I threw on my Midnight Rider outfit.
Yeah, you're no longer Greg Bowe. You're the Midnight Rider.
I told a story on an interview I did early today about Ric Flair and Mick Foley talking about before a match with Harley Race and Kurt Hennig, right? Where they're in the back and this is young Kurt Hennig back in the day before he became Mr. Perfect, right? Like the AWA days, right? And he's wrestling Harley Race for the title, right? And Harley's like, he's smoking a cigar, right? And he says, "What's your finish, kid?" and Kurt Hennig looks at it and says, "Drop kick off the top rope," right? And he takes another puff of his cigar and says, "I'll move."
So it's for that finishing move, yeah.
Harley was the man.
Oh, Harley had a voice that gave Freddy Krueger a Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
That's the truth.
He's another one that I've heard you don't want to screw with in real life. My uncle used to do the Rent-A-Cop stuff at Cap Center, you know, because he was Capitol Police for all those years and everything up there in D.C. And he used to talk about the Sheik. And he used to mention the Sheik and Race and Wahoo and everything. He said Don Morocco was another one you didn't want to mess with, but he said the Sheik would come out there. He says Harley Race and Wahoo and Morocco you never wanted to fight because they were just nasty. They knew how to get it done. But he said that the Sheik,
oh man,
to warm up. You remember how the Sheik used to come out with those ridiculous butter churns all the time?
Mm-hmm.
Do that over the shoulder thing with these butter churns.
Are you talking about the
iron
clubs?
Yeah. You remember those things, those brown things.
Butter churns. That's great.
Butter churns.
Butter churns. I'm sitting there imagining the Sheik doing butter churns and looking up. I just humble you all.
Yeah. Baby, it's not butter, baby. It's pake, if you will.
never screw with an Iranian that can pick up a butter churn, you know what I mean? But he said...
Peace, brother.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm not screwing him. He's got the butter churns. My uncle said that he would go to one of those propane forklifts and grab the two forks and pick that thing up and military press it and have that thing tip back and military press it with the, you know, with the forks to kind of loosen himself up for a match. And, my uncle's no slouch. He said he'd go over there to those butter churns, go to pick them up. It was like picking up Thor's hammer. And there's, you know, the Sheik turning butters over his shoulders. And, out of control. But, yeah, he said Harley Race was a real personable guy. But he was one of those ones you most certainly did not want to screw with.
Scorpio used to run from him a lot because Harley would rib him and chase him with a taser gun. And Two Cold Scorpio would, like, run all over the locker room in the back, just, like, running like hell from Harley, right? And Harley's, like, right behind him, walking really slow, right? Going, hey, coming to get you, right? You know, and Scorpio hid under me, right? And Harley, like, went by, and I was eating. I just picked up a sub for Rick Rude. You know, we used to share tuna sub together every now and then, right? And I had some chips left from the Subway, right? And Scorpio looked at me and said, "Thanks, brother." And I looked at him, "Hey, man, you want some chips?" So he grabs the chips, right, sees Harley, and he takes off again. Harley's coming back at him with a taser gun.
That's hilarious.
Oh, man. Too funny.
You mentioned the Sheik. You know, he was a bodyguard for the Shah of Iran. He also worked, I don't recall if he was on the U.S. Olympic team or he was an alternate in Iran. He coached the U.S. Olympic team.
He came in. He came, from what I heard, he came in number two. I think he was the number two wrestler in Iran, and he ended up coming to America after whoever the Shah or whoever it was ended up shooting the number one wrestler.
Wow.
I know
you guys thought this not on the WD Network. They got these table for threes. Shows. Incredible. Their latest one's really good. It's got Ric Flair, Randy Orton, and Bruno Sammartino. And Sammartino talks – first, he really plugs Ivan Koloff. him and Ric Flair do, I mean, which is really cool. And an interesting story was that him telling about his family escaping the Germans during the World War at the time to get to the States, right? And when he was younger, he got in a, like he had a bad illness, right? To where he almost didn't make it. So he said his mother put leeches in him to help his blood, right? And whatever was wrong with him, the leeches like cured him because it sucked all whatever it was out of him, you know.
Wow,
I thought that was a pretty interesting story.
Speaking of table for three, what about the table for three that was just here recent with Michael P.S. Hayes, Eric Bischoff, and James E. Cornette?
Oh my God! Oh my God! You could cut the tension with a knife.
I had to order me one of those Cornette shirts, and I wore it to a con I was at last weekend. And somebody came up to me, and they're like, "What's that on your shirt?" I said, "It's a guy named Jim Cornette. Jim Cornette is my spirit animal."
it was Michael Hayes. You know, you can see it in his face. He was doing all he could do to make peace, but he just knew that there was a lot of tension there between Cornette and Bischoff. And, you know, both Bischoff and Cornette both have treated me good times I've worked for them, or with them, rather. But they, as far as getting along, forget about it. But they did agree upon one thing, and I had to agree with them, too, that they all didn't like Vince Russo.
the Archbishop of Talentberry.
I was like, cheers, gentlemen.
Amen.
I mean, can you imagine getting into a verbal argument with Jim Cornette? I mean, that's just—it's like spitting in the devil's face, you know. I mean, who can win that? You can't beat him in a verbal argument.
I can only imagine if it was Paul Heyman there. If it was just Heyman, Cornette, and Bischoff, dear Lord.
My name is Paul Heyman.
Yeah, he'll need Brock Lesnar.
If that guy ever loses his voice, his career is over.
He looks like Albert Hitchcock now, don't he?
Oh,
yeah.
Isn't
it Albert Hitchcock?
Yeah, he does.
Paul Heyman. Yes.
Thanks for that, Fro. Now, every time I see him from here on out, I'm going to think about him walking out sideways into that little silhouette.
Give his profile there. Right?
With my client,
who was that, the Birds, Grace Kelly? Was Grace Kelly in the Birds? The movie The Birds.
The Birds, yes.
No, that was
Oh, gosh. No,
man.
Who was the blonde?
That's
going to
bother me.
It's Marion forever for me.
Isn't it like Marion something?
Yeah. Oh God, because it totally ruined her. What he put her through, it just messed her up way too bad.
The Birds.
Oh God, what was
that?
Yeah,
that was a mess. Somebody look that up.
Yeah, normally I'm sitting in front of my laptop. Tonight I'm sitting down on the deck smoking a cigar, and somebody comes up with some movie trivia. Never fails.
All right, this got
the
one
night. What do you want me to look up?
You're welcome,
Dave. What do you want to look up?
Alfred Hitchcock.
John, have
man.
You been listening?
Yeah.
It's the chick that was in The Birds.
Oh, that's Tippi Hedren.
That's it, Tippi Hedren. That's there you go.
Okay. Yeah, I thought there was like some difference. No, Tippi Hedren was so cool. I heard she was so hard to work with, but God, we love The Birds. We really love The Birds.
Yeah.
She was gorgeous.
We like them all day. She really was.
Yeah, those little silver screen goddesses, man. They were the bomb diggity. They were the bees.
Oh, yeah.
They really were. All right, now, Dr. John has got a story for the worst thing that he's ever seen in wrestling. This is in my days with the PWF, and we were in Albemarle.
Please wrestle for free, right?
Be nice now.
So anyway, it's the main event. The Italian This was after George South. So it was Italian Stallion versus the Bloodseeker in the main event. So they're
God bless you, brother.
And they never wrestled in the ring, as you know. It was always out. And so what happened was so here they are. So Bloodseeker reaches under the ring and he pulls out a mailbox. He says, "All right, Stallion, hit me over the head as hard as you can. I'll show you I can take it." And he handed him a mailbox. And Stallion said, "Look, you're an idiot. I'll kill you." And I mean, you know, we got 500 people there in Albemarle. He said, "Do it. I can take it." So he said, "Everybody heard it." They said, "Yep." They took the mailbox, and he hit him over the head. And he stood there for about 30 seconds, and then he collapsed.
30 seconds.
He put his foot on it, and I ran out there.
Was it slow-mo? Instant replay or what? Good Lord.
I don't know. He just stood there. He just it looked like there was nothing else left in his head. He got up just a little bit later, but I counted him out. I mean, the referee was up in the ring. But it was like, it was unbelievable. So we get in the back.
That's worse than the Greg Valentine and Harley Race cell right there. Good Lord.
I said, "Why did you do that?" He said, "Well, I thought I could take it." I said, "That's kind of dumb." So anyway, we had no more mailboxes under the ring. Now, what were you saying, Stro? It was worse than what?
What was that again? Sorry.
Stro, what did
he
you
was
say?
He was asking about Greg Valentine and Harley Race.
Yeah. That 30 seconds to sell it, man. It sounds like a Harley Race Greg Valentine sell. We'll just stand there for like forever and a day, and finally they fall like a tree, like Tim Burr. You know what I mean?
Oh, okay.
They look like on Mortal Kombat, like right before you finish them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you
practicality.
I'm sorry.
I got hit one time.
Lawless victory.
I got hit one time with a stop sign, and it was supposed to be one of those gimmick stop signs, you know, like you know the kind you buy to hang on your wall, the thin one, you know. Somebody actually had an actual freaking stop sign. Yeah, this one was like 13 inches thick.
Oh Lord, mercy!
I didn't know where I was. I felt I could taste the fillings in my teeth. That's probably
for the pecan spike.
Yeah, you know about that one.
Yeah, I tell you, one time I was in the ring with Vader, right?
Yeah.
And I should have listened to Shawn Michaels and Sting when they said cover up, because I mean when he hits you those ham hocks, he hits you hard, right? So yeah, I'm thinking now I'm old school, I can take it, you know. And he hits me one time. And I've seen Tweety Birds, Rings of Saturn, and all that sort of thing, right? And I saw the ham hock coming towards me, and I knew I had to do something. If not, I would lose my jaw, right? So I dumped it, kicked him right between the legs. He doubled up, right? And I double legged and started cross-facing him. And I was like, damn it, Leon, would I owe you money, you know, or something? Because we used to be in the UWFI together in Japan, you know what I mean? The same company, right? I used to watch a lot of his shoe fights. And he looks at me and said, "Hey, dude." So, like, we're both laughing on the mat. I was like, "Just get me out of here before you break my jaw," right? So he gets back there. We get in the back. Terry Taylor's like, "Why was that crap?" You know, and Vader said, "Don't mess with him. That's my boy from Japan." And Vader looks at me, looks back at Vader, and goes, "Oh." But it was kind of funny because, you know, later on, you know, Terry and I became friends, Terry Taylor. But, you know, there was a time before he did that I just wanted – he was one of those people I just wanted to smack in the mouth. Oh, God.
Terry
– so annoying.
Terry was one of those people – Terry's,
you know,
one of those people that you just – I know exactly what you're talking about. I mean, it's like you just want to – just start swinging.
Oh, yeah.
I know what it is.
But you know,
after
be all right
a while,
now.
You get him talking.
Yeah, I mean, later.
Yeah, I mean, but daggum, when you first meet him,
Oh, yeah.
It's like, you know, you want to turn time back about 5 minutes and reevaluate your life choices.
Oh, God. Hey, Dr. John, do you still have your computer open by chance?
Yes, I do. What do you want me to check?
Okay. If you would, and this is the homework for everybody, if you haven't done it already, go to YouTube and look up. You were speaking on Michael Hayes a moment ago.
Yep.
Look up Michael Hayes's music video. Let me tell you something. You can't unsee it. It is...
Yeah.
If they're trying to get any type of news out of those guys in Guantanamo, they're showing them like a constant loop of that video, and they're going, "No, no, no more BS. I tell you all you want to know. You better mention you two times." Because that is the absolute.
We're not talking about Bad Street, are we?
Forward. Yeah, yeah, that's
we're
it.
We're talking about the video. The video
yes.
to it.
Yeah. It
but yeah,
is,
but Terry turned out to be an all right guy, though. I mean, he was really, really cool, and he helped a lot of us out.
No, not
you know,
that one.
WCW and everything.
Not the Backstreet one. Not the one about
Terry
Gordy. He's got another one.
Oh, okay.
Terry Gordy.
Okay.
Man.
Yeah, he's got another one that's like a regular rock. It's not the one about Terry Gordy. You try not to laugh at that one, even though it's kind of tough to get through. But this other one he does, I mean, it is... It is so horrible. And as a hair metal guy, when I was growing up in the 80s, I watch that now and I go, holy smokes, I'm so glad my hair wouldn't grow out like that.
Oh, man.
You know there's still people doing covers of that song, Bad Street?
Really?
Yeah, every once in a while, I'll see if somebody cover it, you know, I forget how many covers there are to date, but that just surprised me, you know?
Well, that's the address I give people that call to sell you security systems and insurance and all that. I always tell them, you know, Bad Street. just to mess with them. But I was a big Terry Gordy fan growing up. I was a huge Terry Gordy fan.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, I remember Bill Watts brought Gordy, you know, Bam Bam and Doc over to WCW to take care of the Steiners because at the time Steiners were like running roughshod of everybody. I mean,
yeah.
I mean they were treating everybody like they do in Japan, just like really roughshod everybody, right? And
oh, yeah, right.
So the Watts that brought Dr. Death and Bam Bam to WCW to do something with the Steiners, right? To kind of bring them back to earth a little bit. You know what I mean? And I remember the first time, one of the first matches, right? They get in the ring and Steiner's, you know, big time shooters, you know, and I think it was Scott or Rick, probably Scott. Scott went to double leg Doc, right? And and Steve just put the brakes on, did the sprawl out and everything, and I almost could read his lips. Him telling him, it's like, oh, not today. I mean, him and Gordy really took it to him. I mean, but I mean, they had some great matches. But, it's just like during the time, I mean, they need a team like Doc and Gordy kind of settle the Steiners down because, you know, they're just going all over the place, man. They were just like doing DDTs off the top rope, and which
well,
they were
course,
awesome.
They
team,
had a good amateur pedigree, and then you talk about, just look at their size. I mean,
oh yeah,
especially Scott. You know, I mean, it's going to be hard even for high level good wrestlers. I mean, you could put, you know, the Briscoes in there with them, who were probably better wrestlers, but probably would just their strength would have probably a hard time with them. I mean,
yeah,
oh yeah,
you know,
so
I remember like one of my coaches said, "How much wrestling does Andre the Giant really need to know?" You know,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
See, that's why I'm excited about the upcoming Brock Lesnar Samoa Joe matchup because of the fact that you got two big guys, right, that both know how to wrestle, right, legit. And it can't help but be good.
Well, we can only allow
that.
I'm not a big.
Towards the end there, Scott Steiner. he got so daggum big he couldn't move.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
He saw. He literally started looking like superstar Billy Graham.
I know it.
And he'd get out there and start talking, and you're going, what's this guy saying? I mean, it was almost like if you had to take a leak and you didn't want to get up when Stone Cold or somebody else or Ric Flair was out there, you always peed whenever Steiner got out and talked because it was, after a while, he got to the point where he'd just get out there and ramble, man. And
I got a funny story for you guys, Dave.
Yeah?
Steiner, matter of fact, remember tonight? That he shot on the whole company. He got up there and he shot on WCW. It's like, Ric Flair, when I see you and all you old bastards, I want to take the remote, switch the channel, and watch Steve Austin and all the other guys who got fired from this company because everybody and my grandma knows WCW sucks, right? And I remember Kevin Sullivan just shaking his head, oh, my God, you know, freaking out. And Booker T and I are laughing, right? Because we're excited. We're just like two little kids. We're trying to see what's happening next. So we're sneaking off in the back when Steiner goes to the curtain, right? So we sneak off, and there's J.J. Dillon and Kevin Sullivan, you know, just chewing out Steiner for what he said, right? And Steiner goes to both of them and points his finger at the chest, rah, 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 you know? It walks off, and Booker and I look going, holy crap, he snapped, right? And the whole time you see Ric Flair, he's hiding behind one of the semi trucks. he thinks Steiner's lost his mind, right? And Goldberg was late getting to the building that night because of a flight delay, right, or something. So Goldberg's just coming in at the same time all this is going down, and he's walking over to Scott. And says, hey Scott, how you doing, right? And Booker we're looking at each other. Oh no, here we go, right? So, But Scott turns to Goldberg and says, oh, hey, buddy, how you doing? And they were like, went arm in arm to the locker room. So basically, Steiner just worked everybody, thinking he was pissed off, but he was just working everybody. You know, he was just,
oh,
it was all big
funny.
Work.
Oh, that's funny. Oh, wow. That's crazy. Well, tell it, guys.
You know, Booker T, though, when Dusty was calling a Booker T match one time, and I'll never forget it because it was WCW. And it was when he was still with Stevie Ray and Harlem Heat. And he says, and Tony Schiavone, you see here how we finish things off when you book a tee. You do your spinny thingy there, if you will, and you put the man on the canvas for a 1-2-3, my brother. We didn't do that spinny thingy.
And you know what?
So
Goldberg told Booker in the table for three. You know, he told him, he was telling Booker, he said, they're talking about Stevie Ray, right? And he was like, hey, Booker, I don't think Stevie Ray liked me that much when I was in WCW, right? And Booker just looked at him and said, well, that's because you're white. And R-Truth was across the table. He was laughing, right? and Dustin didn't know what to say. He was about to roll, you know? And Booker's laughing. He's like, you got to understand. He comes, Stevie Ray comes from a different time back.
God.
Oh,
and I tell you what, Stevie Ray, he'd shut the lights out on you. That guy was the human eclipse. When I saw him, holy smokes.
Mm.
I mean, that guy was the Washington Monument. He was huge.
All right.
In a way, I get to love that guy.
Gentlemen. I hate to say it, but the British lady has told me it's about 90 seconds left. I want to thank everybody. I want to thank
darn Brexit.
John Strickland. I want to thank John Strickland. I want to thank Brett Watson. I want to thank Greg Bo Watson. I want to thank our panelists, Papa Stro Maestro and Dave Atwell. And I got to ask Greg Bo, Brett, and John, will you come back in July?
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
All right.
I'll
be there.
Well, that's great.
It's great
being
here with you guys. Really is.
Hey, y'all too, guys.
All right, we'll
see y'all soon.
I'll just say real quickly, we've got UPWA this Saturday night in Wilmington. Next week, Heroes Con in Charlotte. Greg Bo, Bob Stroh, and I will be there. And then Steampunk Mid-Atlantic in Raleigh, June 23rd and 24th. Signing off for Comic-Con Stars. We'll see you next week. Have a great one, and come to Wilmington to see Papa Stroh at UPWA. Have a good one.
Rock
and
roll.
Cheers.
God bless y'all.
Good night, everybody.